Views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lucid Planet Radio with Dr. Kelly Neff. This hit show will illuminate your senses and empower you beyond your daily stressors and hardships. Renowned psychologist and author Dr. Kelly will captivate you with far-reaching topics and amazing guests as you wake to the greatest version of yourself. Learn to tap into your intuitions, think critically about our world, heal emotional and psychological wounds, and follow your passions to live your dreams. Each week, you'll learn how to navigate the global shift of consciousness and explore the deeper knowledge within. Welcome home. Now here's your host, Dr. Kelly Neff.
Hello, everyone. I am Dr. Kelly, and you are listening to Lucid Planet Radio on Transformation Talk Radio, CRN Digital Talk, and WBLQ 1230 Rhode Island, Connecticut, and New York. Stay with us for the next hour or so, and let us help you experience healing, inspiration, and knowledge, because every week we have some of the most gifted scientists, healers, speakers, and authors helping you to become the greatest version of yourself. You can find out more on thelucidplanet.com and stream all of our podcasts for free on LucidPlanetRadio.com, iTunes, TuneIn Radio, Spreaker, Stitcher, SoundCloud, etc. by searching for Lucid Planet Radio. You can also connect with me on social media. I'd love to hear from you. Facebook and Twitter, The Lucid Planet, and now Instagram as well, where you can follow the weird and wonderful happenings of my life. Also want to welcome everybody who's tuning in on CRN Digital Talk Radio, bringing us to over 11 million homes in the U.S. and over 100 countries. You can visit the website, thelucidplanet.com, to find out how to become an advertising partner, how to nominate yourself for the show, and also how to tune in your area. I also have some big news planned for next year, 2017, so stay tuned. Now, today's show is all about a topic that really two topics that are incredibly relevant and important to me and also very related, which are veterans' health and psychedelic use. Now, there are more veterans committing suicide after returning home from war than who are dying in the ongoing wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. And I'm sure that you would agree that this is not okay. There's a lot of research coming out that it's very promising psychedelics like MDMA, cannabis, and ayahuasca can help these brave men and women heal their war-related PTSD. In the past, I featured Rick Doblin on the show, the director of MAPS, who has talked to me about his meetings at the Pentagon to kind of obtain funding to have these programs instituted for veterans. And of course, they are now in phase three of their clinical trials for MDMA for PTSD, after which the FDA should hopefully make it a legal prescription therapeutic medicine. Now, I've talked a lot about the policy side of things on the show. And for today's show, I'm really excited. We have a very special guest. We get to hear personally from a veteran who has used psychedelics for his healing. I have Alex Seymour joining the show today, all the way from the UK, to talk about his new book, Psychedelic Marine, A Transformational Journey from Afghanistan to the Amazon. He enlisted in the Royal Marines Commandos as a teenager. He served for 6 years, completed two tours of duty, and then 20 years later, he returned as the oldest frontline commando and the Helmand Province in Afghanistan. Now, after returning from duty his second time in Afghanistan, Alex Seymour needed a way to cope with the extreme he faced in the commandos. They lost 7 men in his unit. His best friend was critically injured by a Taliban bomb. And he had these pre-deployment experiences with DMT and psilocybin. So he knew entheogens could help him, but he also knew that just, you know, taking psychedelics at home wasn't enough and that he needed the ceremony and something really sacred to draw meaning from his experiences. And so he set out for the Amazon in search of the hallucinogenic brew known as ayahuasca and found shaman to guide him. And his book is fantastic, Psychedelic Marine, out now. The story about his mythic voyage down the Amazon is absolutely incredible. And the book is very inspiring. It teaches us a lot about the human spirit, courage, and the power we have to transform our consciousness and even heal our subconscious mind using psychedelics. So really excited to have him on. Alex is joining us from the UK, And so we got started a little late. We're just getting him connected to the show right now. So we're going to take a quick break. And in about 3 or 4 minutes or so, I will be back with Alex Seymour, Psychedelic Marine. We'll get to hear about his mythic voyage in the Amazon. So stay tuned with us on Lucid Planet Radio, and I'll see you in a couple minutes.
Brand consultant and coach Jen Morgan is here with Radically Distinct Radio to help maximize your brand's power to produce results. Whether you're a person with a dream and unsure where to start, or a CEO of a successful company wondering what's next, Jen Morgan and the RAD method empowers you to play to your strengths and focus your competitive edge so you can show up in the world as your most powerful brand. Go to jenmorgan.com or call 206-972-5366.
Song of the Heart, Walking the Path of Light, from author and healer Francine Vale, is available now. Through Francine's life story, we learn how imperative it is to love one another. Once this simple truth is learned, peace on earth will prevail. Song of the Heart is a life lived and a story told for this purpose. To learn more about Francine and her amazing gifts, or to order your copy of the book today, visit angelsandlightbeings.com.
Are you ready for a game changer? Sarah Westall is bringing you Business Game Changers Radio. Sarah brings you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Tune in to Business Game Changers Mondays at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Do you want to achieve your goals? Do you want to strengthen relationships with others? Do you want to improve your financial status? Colette Marie Steffen is partnering with Mark Kettenbach to bring you an energetic upgrade online experience. Unfold and develop your full potential. Visit energeticupgrade.com today for more information. That's energeticupgrade.com.
Introducing the Lucid Planet, a digital gathering place featuring cutting-edge, high-vibrational content that will empower and inspire you to become the greatest version of yourself. Visit the Lucid Planet today to stimulate your mind, body, and soul as you connect with a global community of like-minded people. The Lucid Planet is edited by renowned psychologist and author Dr. Kelly Neff, who is here to help you cope with anxiety, connect to your higher purpose, uncover your true passions, and live your dreams. Dr. Kelly's fresh, compassionate perspective emphasizes growth, transformation, healing, and thriving, even in the face of adversity. Say goodbye to bad news and low vibrational media for good, and become part of the larger collective of people working together to navigate the global shift of consciousness and transform the world from within. Join the planet, the Lucid Planet. Visit thelucidplanet.com. Welcome home.
All right, we are back on Lucid Planet Radio with Dr. Kelly. I am thrilled to welcome Psychedelic Marine Alex Seymour to the show, joining us all the way from the UK. How are you doing, Alex?
I'm doing fantastic. Thank you very much for having me on. I'm thrilled to be here.
It's wonderful to have you on. I saw you just got back from Burning Man. Am I right?
Yes. Wow.
Awesome.
Yeah, you don't miss a trick. Yeah, just got back a week ago. It was incredible. Yeah, just posted some pictures on Facebook. It's mind-blowing.
Absolutely. I may have Facebook stalked you. And I think it's that Burning Man is such a great kind of segue into talking about the psychedelic culture and this whole kind of choosing your own adventure and choosing to be happy. And, you know, your book, Psychedelic Marine, was very inspiring and beautiful to me. And I think, yeah, absolutely. And so I guess my question is, you know, do you think that psychedelic use could help the Marines? Now, you use psychedelics in between when you left and then came back. Do you think it could help Marine or anyone heading into a combat environment to use psychedelics beforehand?
Yes. This is a very interesting aspect that nobody's asked me directly before, so it's interesting that you should choose to ask that question. It helped me personally because it helped me give me a sense of life after this life. So some kind of spiritual connection. I wasn't a religious person whatsoever. And they kind of taught me, you know, a new third way. You can either be, you know, traditionally agnostic or an atheist, or you can be religious. And psychedelics taught me that, you know, there is a new third way, and it just opened me up spiritually. And, you know, as a consequence of the experience I had with ayahuasca and previous to joining the services again, DMT, I literally had an out-of-body experience where I thought that I was, I thought that, you know, it was a near-death experience, and it gave me the insight that you don't have as much to fear as we think when we kind of shuffle off this mortal coil, so to speak. And it really gave me, enabled me to go to Afghanistan without the fear of mortality and the fear of death that ordinarily I might have had, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. Do you think that contributed to your decision to go back? For those of you who haven't heard the whole story, I did say in the intro, Alex, of course, he left the Marines. He served 6 years when he was young and then came back 20 years later. He was the oldest. Were you the oldest guy on the front lines?
Yeah, I was pretty much the oldest Marine out in Afghanistan, as far as I'm aware, yeah.
So do you think that using psychedelics, did it contribute to your decision to go back? Or what was your main motivation to re-enlist?
Well, it was a combination of things. I've been working in the IT industry for a couple of different global technology companies based in Silicon Valley for, 20 odd years. And I really did want a change from that, for want of a better word, this is a sabbatical. So that played an element. But I wouldn't necessarily say that the psychedelics drove me to Afghanistan. The real motivating factor was the fact that, I honestly believed and still do that, there was an existential threat there. America had been attacked. The UK was being attacked. There was, this creeping religious fundamentalism that needed to be, people needed to step up and do something, and I was fit enough. I still had all my faculties. I knew that I could legally come back to my job if I joined up as a reservist, and I just wanted to contribute, to tell you the truth. So, it really wasn't until after Afghanistan that ayahuasca and psychedelics really played a key part in helping rejuvenate me in terms of what happened out in Afghanistan.
Sure, sure. And that makes sense. And it's so interesting because you talk about in the book how, you have 90% of the world's heroin stemming from these, Afghanistan, where these government troops are sanctioning and protecting opium cultivation. And then on the flip side, you have the psychedelic drugs, which are illegal. They don't want people using them. And you mentioned in the book how kind of not all substances are created equally, and that you were given the opportunity to try the opium, but you refused because you really were focusing more on substances that would enhance your consciousness.
Yes. So from a simplistic point of view, I view, although I haven't any direct experience of opiates, I view them as kind of consciousness contracting, whereas psychedelics are consciousness expanding. And certainly, we work with some fantastic interpreters out there. And, one day, just I'll say anecdotally, it's in the book, they offered me some raw opium, and of course, whilst you're out there with that responsibility, with lives at stake, no one would ever jeopardize you know, other people's lives out there. You need to be lucid,
on
point all the time, you know. And so there's, you know, doing any kind of a drug out there in Afghanistan was just out of the question, because, you know, you're required to just have two states of mind, you know, alert and asleep, and that's it. You know, anything else is going to compromise operational effectiveness. So, you know, it was really after Afghanistan that, you know, I gained the insight of how powerful these psychedelics can be.
Absolutely. I guess I'm just pointing out kind of like the irony in all of it, you know, that you're there like kind of like protecting these dude. And I really want to talk about what it was like being in Helmand during the war. The book, I was completely shocked by the conditions that you guys were operating under, you know, carrying these massive packs that weigh over 100 pounds in 115 degree heat, really no air conditioning, no cold water. Just, it sounded absolutely kind of terrifying. And you know, I don't know how you could kind of survive in that environment and not have some level of trauma coming back.
Yes, well, I mean, it's an extreme place in every sense. You know, it's, as you say, it's extreme heat, extreme weight. It's extremely hostile. There's you know, one thing that no one ever tells you before you get out there is the tremendous amount of lack of sleep that you get. You're lucky if you ever get, you know, 4 hours, 5 hours straight. And, you know, the working conditions are you know, really hard, because you don't get any days off. You know, you get some R&R in the middle of the tour, and some people were lucky enough to get it, you know, towards the end of the tour when they really needed it. But, you know, you're literally working day and night. They never cancel patrols. Patrols can last 14, 15 hours, and then you've got, you know, Sangha duty. So you're in this perpetual state of high alert and exhaustion. And, you know, it takes some time to recover after that. And men really do need some time to recover, and you know, veterans, you know, have earned the right, I think, to choose how they recover, and I chose this way. And, you know, this is one of the intentions of me, you know, writing the book, so I can bring an awareness to, you know, the world, hopefully, that, you know, there's an alternative to other ways to recover from things like you know, trauma and anxiety and the other PTSD related afflictions that guys are bringing back from the war, because we know that, you know, that there's a lot of pain and trauma that's being brought back that we still need to deal with, you know, within our countries. Yeah,
absolutely. Well, and you know, it's really hard to imagine, unless you've been in that type of a situation, what it does to your adrenals and what it just does to your psyche to be that exhausted but also that, you know, constantly in fear of your life, or constantly having to defend your life, where there's people throwing bombs over the walls, or you're going on patrols and people are blowing you up. There's a great story in the book about kind of like you guys did a patrol and everybody walked over an IUD twice and it didn't go off. You know, that kind of stuff feels like so stressful, so traumatic. And it's very courageous, I think, what you're doing to put your personal story out there. There's a lot of research, you know, and there's a lot of people who kind of choose to remain anonymous in the face of all of this. But I believe that what we need is more stories from people who've actually been through it and who have actually gone on these alternative routes to find that healing that they needed. So I think that's really great. And like I'm saying, it's great to have the book so that people can understand this isn't just your average, you know, war is war. It's traumatic. It's severe. It's never easy, you know? And, you lost a lot of people in your unit, right? You lost like seven men in your unit, I think. Yeah. And that's incredibly traumatic. And just going on just my experience with the veterans in my own life, the survivor's guilt that comes along with that line of thinking, why was it, did you ever feel like that? You know, why am I alive and they're dead? Why did that happen? Do you ever, did you ever have those thoughts?
What I wanted to do when I got to the Amazon, because I embarked on an ayahuasca shamanic journey almost immediately, within, you know, a couple of weeks. So it was a clear intention that I had that whilst I was in the Amazon, in this wonderful staggeringly different environment. That was completely lush jungle, completely opposite to the desert. The intention was that, you know, while I was there, I would focus my intentions on, you know, getting myself together, getting myself, you know, back to normal, and also considering the fate of the men that died in my unit and were traumatized in my unit. You know, one of my best friends, JJ, who I'm still friendly with now, you know, was blown up by a Taliban bomb in a bomb making factory, just on a routine search. And you know, so while I was under the influence of ayahuasca, not only did I have these, you know, incredibly powerful, you know, visions and emotions, and it was like new neurons were being literally illuminated and firing up in my brain for the first time, and new senses were being, you know, revealed to me, and new insights. But also, whilst I was under the intoxicating influence of this amazing potion, I wanted to focus on these men and their families as well. So being able to do that many, many times during many ayahuasca sessions, I think, was a good way for me to just heal myself and also make peace with myself about what I'd been through, to tell you the truth.
Absolutely. Did you always know you were going to do ayahuasca right after you got discharged or after your tour was done? Or how did you find out about this, and what kind of prompted the whole journey for you to go?
Yeah, okay. Great question. I had no intention of going to the jungle to do ayahuasca, you know, and traveling to the southeast of the UK, you know, with a shaman. Whilst I was in Afghanistan, during the tour when I was on the front line, it was only when I was literally about to be shipped back to the UK at a week's R&R, and they had a few internet connected PCs, and I was able to Google, God bless Google, and I found two ayahuasca retreats. Yeah, and it was incredible. And I knew that I wanted to, you know, eventually, you know, go on an ayahuasca retreat because of my previous experience with DMT, and I knew obviously that the route, or not so obviously, so those who don't know, but you know, ayahuasca is made up of you know, one of the active ingredients in it is DMT, and so it was that previous experience I had. I thought, well, you know, there's no point going on another beach holiday. You know, I've done 20 beach holidays. The last thing I need is another tan. I've got, you know, a couple of months here where I can seriously go off the radar and go deep into some, you know, self-exploration. And it was a new, invigorating experience in the kind of environment that's the opposite, the antithesis of Helmand, you know, the abundant green lushness of the jungle with a shaman in a ritualistic kind of shamanic ceremony under the influence of this, you know, crazy, powerful ayahuasca that should be available to everybody.
Absolutely. And it's interesting because you wrote in the book how this is a very taboo thing, but wouldn't you agree, even in the last couple years, that more and more people are talking about ayahuasca, writing about it, going to the jungle to take it, or having the opportunities to experience it? It seems that its healing properties have kind of begun to insert themselves into the mainstream. Have you noticed that in the way that people accept the way that you've been pursuing your healing?
Yes, I completely agree. And you know, that links back to the fact that, you know, when I first started writing the book, I did actually consider, you know, writing it anonymously under a pseudonym. But more and more people are just, you know, being bold and just saying, no, there's nothing to be ashamed of. This is a natural plant medicine, a gift from the Amazon that's free and abundant to all of us. And so more and more people are writing about it now. And I had no idea at the time. But when I got back from the jungle, I started Googling, and I found out that the Americans are way ahead of me, and they've already made some documentaries, and there's other documentaries in the pipeline, you know, for these vets that are going down to the jungle and also in America to use this plant medicine as a way to heal themselves. And, you know, one of the organizations I discovered that I'm linked into now is called VETS, the acronym being Veterans for Entheogenic Therapy.
And,
there's a wonderful ex-Marine there called Ryan LeCompte, who's now my friend, and I'm connected into him. He's got a Facebook page dedicated to this and a charity. And, you know, him and other guys are literally boldly taking guys that need it most down to the jungle, immersing them in these ceremonies. And, you know, and they're coming back transformed and healed. And so it's very, very powerful. And it wasn't just, you know, me that had the idea. As I said before, you know, there's other people that have already had the idea before me and they've already done it. And that was fantastic news to find that out.
Absolutely. Well, and if you think about it, I mean, sacred plant medicines, they do exist in kind of our collective unconscious. I mean, humans have been using plants in ceremonies and for shamanic healing purposes for thousands of years. So it's almost a return to what we have forgotten. And perhaps that's why it's so potent and so powerful for people. I want to ask, since we're talking, we're canceling all the breaks today, by the way, since we got started late. So we're just going to go right on through to the end of the show. So hopefully that's cool with you. We're just going for it. Cause I have so much I want to talk to you about. I would really love it if you could describe for our listeners what takes place during a typical shamanic ceremony when you're with shamans and other people in the jungle with ayahuasca, if there's such a thing as a typical ceremony, in quotes.
Yeah, I would say yes, there is. There's a format that most of them seem to follow. You know, we should really call it what it is. You know, it's a ritual and it's ancient, and they've been doing it for probably millennia, as far as we know. And you know, it seems to work. And so the process is, you know, night comes down. There's, you know, an ayahuasca maestro or a seasoned shaman that knows how to work with these plant medicines. And, you know, in my first ayahuasca retreat, which was a conventional one, unlike the next one, which was the Mythic Voyage, which is a completely, you know, off the radar, unconventional one, crazy one. Yeah. But in a more normalized one, you know, you drink the plant medicine ayahuasca, you wait for it to settle into your stomach after about 30 minutes. You lie back, usually in a circular building called a malope, I believe, and you are serenaded, for want of a better word. This is what happened to me, by the shaman who sings these incredibly powerful songs called Ikaros that bring in the that bring in spirits or energy from other realms, and they help work with your intentions, you know, in a kind of a magic way. It's a magic and powerful way where the sound and the vibration of the jungle and these ancient songs that are soothing and beautiful literally impact you and work their way through your body and help, you know, release stuck emotions, stuck energy. There's a very liberating feel that you get from it. So, and after that typically lasts, you know, for a few hours, then, you know, in a very calm and gentle way, you gradually come back to baseline and, you know, sleep like a baby and then wake up and then the next night do it all again.
It sounds like you definitely sat for a lot of ceremonies while you were there, and that I loved how you weren't trying to romanticize anything. You talked about how these ayahuasca ceremonies could often be just as weird and as crazy as being in Afghanistan, but in a totally different way. So I'd love to hear from you kind of about the more weirder stuff that happened, and certainly the Mythic Voyage is a big part of that.
Yes, certainly. Well, you know, the first, say, five or six ceremonies were at a conventional ayahuasca retreat. It was run by an ex-Wall Street guy that had turned his back on that whole industry, and it made him sick. And so he basically just went, took his money, came down to the Amazon, immersed himself in the ayahuasca culture, and built his own environment and retreat. And, you know, it was the real deal. This guy was fantastic. The shaman he had was fantastic. So equally, you know, so was the ayahuasca. But, you know, even on the first night there, I was only there with two other people. One was an addict who was trying to get clean, a young guy from Norway. And the other one was a middle-aged lady from Hong Kong. And she worked for Microsoft for many years. And she literally, you know, 20, 30 minutes into the ceremony, went into what I can only describe as a catatonic state. And it was very alarming because we thought she'd stop breathing, and so you can imagine I was hallucinating very powerfully, and everybody was trying to massage her and bring her around, and you know, the shaman was standing over her, you know, blowing smoke over her to try and you know cleanse her, and people were, you know, just really trying to manipulate her to just bring her back into consciousness, but there was just absolutely nothing going on, and it was. It was only after about, you know, nearly an hour of doing this that we thought, oh, my God, you know, what on earth is happening? And it's not what you want in your first ayahuasca ceremony, believe me. And so, you know, after about an hour, luckily she came round and it was fine. And thankfully for all of us, you know, the next night she decided to sit the next one out, and the rest of the ceremonies were fine and calm and everything. So, but you know, as you mentioned, you know, that was the first retreat that I went to. The next one was called the Mythic Voyage, and that was just off the scale weird in a whole way I could never possibly have imagined. Not only in an inspirational way, but also in, you know, an alarming way at certain times during that journey.
Sure. Well, you talked in the book, I love that. I would have been the exact same way. You talked about how you were like, is this a cult? Because you're like on a boat in the middle of the Amazon with this very charismatic leader, stopping at all these places, doing all these ceremonies. And some of them have like weird vibes and some of them have awesome vibes. And you start wondering, like, you get paranoid. Is this a cult? I feel like I totally would have reacted the same way. What did you do when you, I don't know if I'm as ballsy as you are to go to the Amazon. I've always wanted to try it. The book actually gave me a lot of good insight. But yeah, I think if I was in that situation, I would definitely get paranoid, because you're literally just like afloat and you're doing all these really intense psychoactive chemicals that are affecting you. And so what did you do when you thought you might be part of a cult? How did you like reconcile that in your mind?
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, just to give that a bit of context. So, what happened was I embarked on this thing called the Mythic Voyage, and the unique thing, to the best of my knowledge, about this was there was a guy who was basically a polymath. He was borderline genius, one of the cleverest people I've ever met in my life, called Mikis. He created this thing called the Mythic Voyage, and this was the sixth one, where he had this beautiful. Restored 19th century ship with a load of private cabins on board, and each night the intention was we would just sail down the Amazon River, God knows where, but you know, miles and miles from civilization, and then we'd jump on a canoe and then just travel to the riverbank, and then his team of a few shaman and other guys would hack their way into the jungle with machetes and create the ceremony space. And uniquely, we'd have the ceremony underneath the stars in the jungle under the influence of ayahuasca. And he had seven little tiny shamana, female shaman, with him. They all sung different Icaros. And it was incredible, this entire wall of sound. And so this is something I couldn't have possibly envisioned or imagined that would actually take place. And you know, some people you know, had a wonderful time during those ceremonies, others had problems. But of course, having come from Afghanistan, you know, I was on this mythic voyage. It was literally, you know, a mythical kind of adventure for me, and so it all seemed so wonderful and great, and I was overwhelmed with, you know, friendliness for these new insights and these new people that I was meeting in this charismatic leader. And it was only on about the third ceremony that somebody said, Alex, you know what this is? And I said, no. And we were literally coming back from an ayahuasca ceremony. He said, it's a cult. And it just ruined everything for me. It was like, pop, bang, you idiot. You've just wandered completely off the reservation. You don't know any of these people. You have got no map. You're out here with this charismatic leader. You just really have got no clue what's going on. And this guy as well, let me tell you, each day he seemed to be coming, or becoming increasingly unhinged, because there'd be workshops in the morning at, say, 9 a.m. in this kind of dining room they've got on the ship. And each day they'd get more and more esoteric, more and more kind of strange. And so when this person, who was a political consultant, a very clever man who I respected and grew to admire on this voyage, said that, this guy that's running the ceremony is running a cult, I just lost the plot. And I just thought, of course, it's a cult. And I blundered my way into it like an idiot. And so to get myself back on track, I had to run around literally a few people and say, listen, you do realize what's going on here. This seems totally unorthodox. This is a crazy place that we're in. Who knows what's in the ayahuasca? And I basically bored down to the fact I was losing trust for the guy that was running it. And sure. It was only having spoken to this one particularly fabulous human being who was a heart surgeon called William. And I sat down with him for half an hour and I said, listen, should I trust this guy? Are we really, are our lives at risk here? Who knows what's going on? And he took half an hour, God bless him, to reassure me and assure me and say, look, it's not a cult. Don't worry. It's kind of culty. And there is a cult of personality around with this guy, but I trust him, and you should trust him too, Alex. And so it was only once I'd really kind of released myself from that fear burden that I really began to have a new insight and re-enjoy the environment that I was in. And I just looked at it with a new, fresh perspective. And you're right, I was paranoid. Most people, with a modicum of intelligence, would become paranoid if someone said that. And I just had to work my way through it, Kelly, to tell you the truth.
Well, absolutely. And I feel in a lot of ways, like you being conditioned by war, it's going to, you used to say, you said in the book, staying paranoid means you're staying alive. And so it's part of working through that conditioning. That's part of kind of that PTSD of questioning everything. But then the flip side is, and I don't know, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, being conditioned by war and all of the hardships and the incredibly intense environment you were in. Do you think that maybe your ayahuasca journey in the physical, psychological sense, that it wasn't as difficult as it would be for other people who weren't already conditioned to very challenging life and situations?
Sorry, could you reframe that question?
Sure, dude. I'm just wondering if you think that maybe your ayahuasca would have been harder if you hadn't been through war and kind of, because ayahuasca is very physically demanding, right? You're throwing up.
Yeah.
You're kind of sick and like maybe pushing yourself to the limit physically in war. Do you think that it made it easier for you to deal with that many ceremonies in such a small amount of time?
Yeah, you know what? I just thought, well, what's the worst that could happen? We know it's a purgative and I'm going to be nauseous. But, the key thing for me really was just working my way back to trust, because I'd come from an environment in war where, the only people you trust are the guys in your immediate team around you. And it does pay to be paranoid in terms of, you've got to watch out for conflict. Every step of every patrol, every day, day and night. And so, working your way through that kind of therapeutically into a sense of, trust, it was a journey for me. But ayahuasca helped me, because literally the sense of connection it gave me to nature and to others around me and the new overwhelming sense of empathy was just so powerful that, I really feel that it was ayahuasca that gave me that insight and led me there out the other side of it and provided the profound healing that it did.
I would love to hear a little bit about your kind of the types of experiences that you had while on ayahuasca, the types of visuals you would see and the types of feelings that you would feel, and how you bring those back to integrate them into your current state of mind.
Yeah, sure. Well, you know, I remember, you know, on the second ceremony, just having this overwhelming, you know, I mean, we could start with the hallucinations. I mean, that's a given. They are incredible. So, you know, the jungle around you literally comes to life and starts dancing. The fractals are just off the scale, incredibly beautiful, with colors just popping in and out of existence, along with alien life forms and landscapes. It's just, it's too incredible to really describe with normal language. But you know, in addition to that, it's far more than that. It was, you know, it's a feeling, it's a sense that this is plants, this is nature trying to communicate with us. And I got an overwhelming sense again and again and again, so consistently, that, you know, we're not separate entities. We're all connected to each other. We're all connected to the ecosystem. We're all connected. We are part of nature. We are nature itself. And it was manifesting it inside, you know, my being in such a powerful way that I was so transformed. I felt like I was becoming, you know, spiritually connected to the actual planet and the universe, and, you know, for want of a better word, you know, to God, I suppose. And yeah, that's what was so transformational. And so that's really what you know, I brought back with me. It changed me forever, and I remain changed. And now, you know, I'm a different person. You know, I'm less cynical. I'm more open. I'd like to think I'm more empathetic. I'm more conscious. I'm more aware of nature. You know, it's all good. It just ticks all the boxes, to tell you the truth. I recommend it.
You recommend it. Do you think it is for everyone, ayahuasca?
No, it's not for everybody. I recommend it for those people that, you know, have got a kind of adventurous nature, but for those people that have got a history of psychiatric illness in their family, and I should add, there was none of that in mine, thankfully. You know, I wouldn't necessarily recommend it. You know, the best thing to do, as with anything, is to, you know, consistently and really thoroughly and diligently do your research with any of these substances before you embark on them. You know, because it's all about, you know, setting and dose, and if you get any one of those wrong, then, you know, it can go from, you know, a good magical experience to, you know, a not good one. And so, you know, I would recommend those people that, you know, have a very, very delicate disposition in terms of, you know, psychiatric problems. They avoid it. I mean, that's kind of obvious, really. And then there's some golden rules as well. Those people that, you know, are taking things like Prozac or antidepressant, SSRI.
Right, no MA, yeah, exactly, SSRI, MAOI type interactions. Correct. Very important. Yeah. So we only have a couple minutes left. I wanted to ask you as well about your experiences in ayahuasca. Did you come into contact with a lot of entities, or like your fallen family from your troop when you were in Afghanistan? Did you ever experience any interaction with them from the other side?
Well, I had a bit of a shaky time on about the third or fourth ceremony during the Mystic Voyage. It was on the island, and I really felt like there was some kind of dark, malignant kind of entity just trying to permeate my mind. And no matter what I did, I just tried to shake it, shake it, and it just wouldn't seem to go away. And then luckily, as with everything, you can just wake these things out, and you're fine at the end of it, you know. And that's the great thing, you know, with ayahuasca. You know, as long as you have that as your grounding rod, you just be patient. Everything will return back to baseline eventually. But, you know, in terms of the flip side of things, you know, I remember one day just having a connection to, my soul to JJ, one of the guys that was badly wounded out there, one of my best friends. And it was like, you know, I can feel you in my soul, brother. It was just such a strong connection. I can feel you. I can sense you. And the sense of, you know, empathy was just overpowering. That I thought we, at that time, we were really connected. And, you know, even if we weren't, what's the worst that can happen? You know, I was inspired. So
yeah,
it was a good thing, and I definitely recommend it.
Awesome. And we've only got a couple of minutes left. Gosh, that went by fast. And so, Alex, I would love to know, what are your plans to do next after Burning Man, since you've done that one now? And then also let our listeners know where they can buy the book.
Yeah, sure. So the short answer is it's on Amazon.com, so it's there now.
Perfect.
I'm really pleased with the people that have contributed to, you know, the recommendations and the testimonials. That's fantastic. So, you know, I couldn't have wished for more as far as that's concerned. What I'm going to do next is really I'm going to stay connected to, you know, the vets organization that I told you about earlier.
Yes.
And, you know, there's a couple of other guys that are making documentaries with big networks at the moment. And so that's just going to heighten and raise awareness of the fact that, you know, people can, you know, help cure themselves with, you know, with trauma and PTSD. And it's not just limited to vets. This is something that can be used by everybody, because all human beings experience suffering.
Yes.
For want of a better word, to some degree. And this can really help alleviate those people that, you know, want to take the journey down this path. And so that's really my next step, to stay connected with these guys. I've been approached by one of the large British TV networks to make a documentary, and nothing would make me happier than to take a group of guys that need it most, you know, and not necessarily veterans, but, you know, people that have got PTSD down and immerse themselves into these sacred ceremonies so that they can have it and enjoy it for themselves.
That's amazing. I'm really looking forward to seeing that. And I think you should definitely do it. And really a positive message of hope and healing in the face of adversity. So Alex Seymour, Psychedelic Marine, thank you so much for coming on the show today. It's been great to have you on.
Well, thank you very much for having me. It's been lovely. It's been fantastic. Thank you. I really enjoyed it.
It has. And please send me all those links, and I'll get those all posted to the website. Again, everyone listening, you can tune in every Wednesday at 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific, thelucidplanet.com. You can listen to all the podcasts for free on lucidplanetradio.com, as well as following up on SoundCloud and Instagram, Facebook, all of that, Lucid Planet with Dr. Kelly. And I will see you all next week. I will be interviewing Brandon Beecham, host of the Positive Head podcast, all about the evolution of consciousness and transformational media. So similar vein. Stay tuned for that. And once again, thank you to my guest today, Alex Seymour. And I will see everybody next week. Light and love. Take care of yourselves. Bye.
You've been listening to the hit show, Lucid Planet Radio, with renowned psychologist and author, Dr. Kelly Neff. Tune in each week as we illuminate your senses and empower you beyond your daily stressors and hardships. This hit show will captivate you with far-reaching topics and amazing guests as you wake up to the greatest version of yourself. Learn how to navigate the global shift of consciousness as you explore the deeper knowledge, passion, and purpose within. Visit lucidplanetradio.com for upcoming show topics and to contact Dr. Kelly.